the road to recovery, step by step. Tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Spencer, can we have our alcoholic joke?
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. And I got another one from Take Me to Your Sponsor, Best Jokes and Cartoons from A. Grapevine. The town drunk went to see the doctor. "My whole body hurts," he complained. The drunk put his finger on his left shoulder. "When I touch myself here, it hurts," he whined. Then he put his finger near his heart. "When I touch myself here, it hurts," he said. Then he put his finger on his thigh and moaned. "When I touch myself here, it hurts too. No matter where I touch myself, Doc, it hurts something terrible. Please tell me what's wrong." The doctor replied, "You have a broken finger."
Thank you, Spencer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach. And Don, can we have the secretary report, please?
Hey, my name is Don, and I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. Now, in keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are going around now. Dig deep, people. We need your financial support. Now, as the baskets are going around, I've asked Matt to read the recovered statement. Now, we read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it means to be recovered alcoholic. Matt.
Good evening. My name's Matt. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic, and here is the recovered statement. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. The presence a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, we would not be able to drink. We would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body, page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you,
1940 style big book sponsorship from Forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered up at once and remained that way. Now, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stood on with AA showed improvement. Now, what we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. Now, the statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Not bad. Anyone looking for a sponsor, raise your hand. Anyone looking for a sponsor tonight? We got a bunch of people looking for sponsors. Now, if you're looking for a sponsor, guys, and you raise your hand, after the meeting, hang out by the literature table, the rack there, and those who are willing to sponsor, start talking to them. We need people to sponsor other people tonight. Good stuff. Let's get these folks back to God. Now, can all the recovered alcoholics in the house raise your hand? Nice. Now, if your hand wasn't raised, we suggest you hang out with one of those whose hands were raised. Now, let's do some announcements. Now, BCIC. No, we're not. We are, BCIC. Intergroup is where you can buy... Oh, I'm sorry. Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature medallions, and Intergroup is also responsible for creating the when and where and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. Next slide is BCIC. Now, they're responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, like jails, detoxes, and rehabs. Now, they meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Anyone in the house from BCIC? Raise your hand. 2-3 people. Now, if anyone's looking to get involved in BCIC, one of these guys with their hands raised will tell you how to do it. Now, we have some volunteer opportunities. Now, we have a appreciation banquet on February 19th. It's next week, I believe. At the Intergroup Bookstore. 2 weeks. 2 weeks, sorry, 2 weeks. 6:15. If you want to do some volunteering, just show up there. Next. Now, Marion M., after Tom, this is Tom's last night after his engagement. We go right into Marion M. For 6 weeks. So, so far we had a really good lineup and speakers, and the year is just getting started. So looking forward to that. Monday, every Monday in this very room right here, we have a big book study where we go through the big book line by line, dissect it, share on it. Really good meeting. If you're interested, 7:15 in this room. We're also on Zoom now if you're tech savvy and can't make it in person. I believe that's it for announcements. At least it is. Now, in the back, we have CDs, mugs, large print, big books, little red books, big book dictionaries for sale. Now, we meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15. We ask you to be courteous and ready to begin at the Road to Recovery tune. Enjoy the meeting, guys.
Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might, will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on this step study tonight. Is everybody ready? All right, let's start the meditation.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to lead the fog light prayer. It is shared on the screen for those of you who don't know it. God. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I've asked my friend Noah to read Appendix 2, The Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know when one is.
My name is Noah, and I'm an alcoholic. This is spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in the book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden or spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters of a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over the period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he himself is. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few expectations, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of the power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say to that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. This is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in an everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Noah. Please refrain from disrupting others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. Time to introduce the speaker. It's the last week we have of Tom. Really enjoyed all the experience, strength, and hope. I've even tried to drive a little bit better thinking of your story of the little old couple. But excited to see how you tie up the series in a nice Arizona bow. Let's welcome Tom.
Good evening. How's everybody this evening? Doing good, huh? Good. I like that enthusiasm, you know. That's the way I am. I'm very enthusiastic about my sobriety, you know. And I've been that way for a long time. You know, I was raised right in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I finally surrendered, which took quite a while, you know, I came to AA 51 years ago, and it took me 11 years to get the first year. So do the math. I'm sober 41 years now. and I'm still very, very enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because yesterday's booze is not getting me drunk today, and yesterday's sobriety won't keep me sober today. I have to ask myself every day, what are you going to do today to stay sober? Because this is the only day I have. You know, I have this day. You know, and we, there's many people that are taught upon awakening, on page 86 in the big book, and how to start your day out. You know, once you get, we're going to talk the 11th and 12th step, and we're going to talk a lot about God. Because I love to talk about God. God saved my life. Not only that, is that the God that I have, he loves me unconditionally. You know, I do not have to merit God's love. I was raised in a religion that told me I had to merit his love. And I'll just be honest with you, you know, you won't hear me stand up here and say that I'm a recovering Catholic, okay? Because the big book I read teaches me to see where religious people are right, not where they're wrong. But class in hand, I warped my mind. And I made myself crazy. And I had to have somebody to blame for my alcoholism. And who is better to blame than God? I mean, he made me an alcoholic. I used to go to them meetings, you know, and I'd hear them people in the meeting say that they were a grateful alcoholic. And I used to think, what in the hell is wrong with these people? What's there to be grateful about, okay? Because I was not grateful about getting put in jail all the time, you know. I mean, you know, I got an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. You know, and I don't break out, the allergy I have, I don't break out in hives, I break out in handcuffs. So, you know, I mean, I blamed that God. I had a punishing God. You know, I'm an Irish Catholic, born and raised in Springfield, Illinois, Peoria, Illinois. Catholic schools my whole life. Catholic high schools. I had a nun in the second grade, and I never liked authority, you know, and I was always a smart ass. It started in the second grade, a second grade kid, okay, with a nun that would grab me, a mean old Irish nun. She'd grab you by your ears and shake your head violently like that. I had a Monsignor Schwartz who had a great big class ring. And he was when you were altar boy for him, if you screwed up in the Latin or something and you got back in the sacristy, he'd bash you on the head with that ring. And I had a mother superior that had a canoe paddle with holes drilled in it. And she'd say, bend over and grab your ankles and then hit you in the butt so hard, knock you across the room. And I had Christian brothers in high school who would take you out back and use their knuckles on you. I had a brother, Jerome, math teacher, who, right at the eraser runner, he would draw a little circle, the distance from your jaw to your nose. And then he would have you kneel on your fingers, and you better keep your nose inside that circle. You can't take the pressure off of your fingers. And in those days, that was called corporal punishment. I guess capital punishment, they just shoot you, you know. But that was corporal punishment, you know. And I grew up, you know, that. I mean, we all grew up that way. I'm 72 years old, you know. I mean, they don't do that kind of stuff today. But that's the way it was for us kids then. And so I got a real bad taste in my mouth over the clergy and religion and wanted nothing to do with it. And I had a real problem with God. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I learned, you know, sometime later, you know, after years of being around, then finally surrendering, getting sober, and I heard a man say it in a meeting one night. He said, I came here, I was a God hater. And I knew that that's who I was. I was a God hater. I hated God. The biggest resentment I had was towards God. So I had a lot to get over. I had a sponsor who, you know, I had sponsors and I had people in Alcoholics Anonymous who would tell you things. And they weren't nice things. You know, they would say to you, you know what your problem is? Because, you know, the people in AA love to tell you about what your problem is because they got the same problem you got. They know what your problem is. I'd say, no, what's my problem? Well, your problem is you think you're unique. And I'd say, well, my whole body's tattooed. I am unique, okay? I'm not the same. I'm not a square like you. I'm not like you, okay? I like being unique. And then he said, yeah, but you got terminal uniqueness. It's killing you, see? Terminal. And then I had a sponsor. He told me, he said, and I didn't even realize it, you know? I mean, I had to really work on that. He said, you know what, Tom? You don't stand much of a chance of change until you get rid of your victim story. Your victim story's got to go. Well, I didn't even know I had a victim story. But I sure as hell did. The old timers would say, you know what? You got a ring around your ass. What? I told a young kid that. He said, what's that supposed to mean? I said, from sitting on the pity pot. That's what they told us. That's where you got that ring, you know. Pour me another drink. Whining, moaning, complaining. Look at what God did. How many times did I use that? You're telling me about this loving God. How many times did I use that to tell myself, I'm not getting the girlfriend. I'm not getting the car. I'm not getting the job. You know, every time I came here, I had a key to nothing. You know, I'm a low bottom drunk off the street. I'm not getting this. I'm not getting that. My ship ain't coming in. And sit out there in the crowd and say, this is a bunch of bull crap, okay? God's got it out for me. I don't know why. And use as an excuse to go and get drunk. I used as an excuse to get drunk for years and to feel sorry for myself. So we're going to talk about God. I'm going to tell you a story. I got sober in 1983, December the 9th, 1983. I no longer could stop drinking anymore. The progression of alcoholism had taken me to that place. And so I was in the VA hospital in Tampa on an abuse. That's where I ended up. I graduated high school in 1971. I went to Notre Dame. Not Notre Dame College, Notre Dame High School in Peoria, Illinois. And I was the last in my class out of about 345. They gave me a diploma just to get rid of me. My senior year in high school, I didn't even have a book. I had to work, you know. I mean, the old man wasn't going to pay for it, but he was going to make you go there. You had to buy your books and pay a little tuition in those days. I used that money to buy weed and acid with. And all I did my senior year was trip all the time and walk around with a notebook. And so they just wanted to get rid of me, you know. That's one good thing about a Catholic school. They don't have to obey public laws, you know. They just give you a diploma and say, get out, you know. You're graduated. So 1991, my 20th high school reunion, you know, I lived here for 38 years. I've been retired going on 8 years, went back to Arizona. I used to live in Arizona in the 70s. Stayed here to get my pension. Anyway, they asked me. I took my newlywed wife, who I met in the program in 1989. She'd never been. She was from outside Asheville, near Maggie Valley. And I took her to Peoria with me. We just had our first son. 1991, he was born. He just turned 34. Anyway, there were a lot of kids that had died in my class. The girl I was in love with, wanted to marry, was drunk on a motorcycle with another guy and went over the top, hit her head on the curb, and never woke up, died the next day in a coma. All the girls loved her, Marcia McInerney. And the guy that started me on dope was one of the biggest dealers in Central Illinois. He had farmhouses all over town that were hideouts. When I first got out of the Army, he took me down the basement. It was loaded to the ceiling with bales of Columbia. And he said, "You want to go to work for me?" And I said, "Hell yeah." 1974, he had two beepers. I'd never seen a beeper before. That's when beepers first came out. I said, "What's that?" He said, "That's a beeper. That's how people get a hold of me." Okay? They found him buck naked outside the farmhouse at the bottom of the steps with his heart blown up from cocaine. And a few others, and they know I was in the program, and they said to me, after dinner, you know, "Will you get up and talk and just, you know, share some memories of these people? You know, good things." I said, "Yeah, you know, it's not an AA talk. Just talk about our classmates." And I said, "Okay." So I got up there, and usually, you know, I start with a joke. So I'm going to tell this joke, and I'm a laborer. I've been a union laborer. Next year will be 50 years. And I ran the laborers' union here for 28 years, you know. And so I'm going to tell a joke about the two Irish laborers, Pat and Mike, and they're working across the street from the house of ill repute. And they're down in the ditch, and it's a quiet street, and they can just see over the top of the street. It's real quiet, and they're down there digging in the sewer, and they hear some steps, and they look up and look over the street. And they see the Protestant minister, and he stands in front of the house, and he looks one way, and he looks the other way, and he doesn't see anybody coming, and he ducks inside. And Pat says to Mike, "Oh, my God, Mike, did you see that? A man of the cloth going into a house like that." And Mike said, I know, 'tis a shame before God." And they went back digging, and after a while, they heard some more footsteps, and they looked up over the street. And they saw the Jewish rabbi, and he stood in front of the door, and he looked one way, and he looked the other way. He didn't see anybody coming, and he ducked inside. And Pat said to Mike, "Oh, my God, Mike, did you see that? The Jewish rabbi, no less, going into a house like that." And Pat said, I know, Mike, 'tis a shame before God, you know. And they went back digging. And after a few minutes, they heard some more steps. And they looked up over the street, and it was their parish priest, Father Murphy. When Father Murphy stopped in front of the house, he looked one way, he looked the other way, he didn't see anybody coming, and he ducked inside. And Pat said to Mike, "Oh my God, Mike, did you see that, Father Murphy?" And Pat said, "I know, Mike, one of the girls must be sick, and he's here to give the last rites." Right? Us Catholics wouldn't do that. Maybe them other religions do that, but not us Catholics, right? So I'm a hoodlum. I run in gangs since I was in the fifth grade. I was not just an alcoholic and a dope fiend, but a criminal too. And a boy who's the total opposite of me, he was valedictorian. He did go to Notre Dame on a scholarship and to the seminary. He was the president of the student council, and he was a big bookworm, a real square, you know. Father Jerry. And he's heading my way after my talk, you know, after I give the talk. And I thought, oh, boy, he's going to give it to me, right? He's going to let me have it. He's not like that joke. I said, "Oh, Father Jerry." I said, "Jerry, I hope we weren't offended by that joke." He said, "Oh, no, Tom." He said, "I got a men's group. I'm going to tell him that joke." He said, "That's not what I wanted to talk to you about." And I said, "What do you want to talk to me about?" He said, "Well, Tommy," said, "I heard you're a friend of Bill's." And I said, "I am." And he said, "So am I." I was that priest. I'd lost all faith. Hearing confessions, giving communion, and I didn't even believe in God anymore. He said, "I thought I knew all about God. But you know what? The people of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me about God, who God really is. I learned in the rooms of AA, a Monsignor." That was in 1991. I was the 50th. I said, he said mass for us, and I said, "Jerry, you still sober?" "You bet, Tommy. You bet I am, you know. God bless you." So, yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous is where I found my God. A God that loves me unconditionally. I don't have to merit his love. You see, grace is an unmerited gift. And I'm sober by the mercy of God, and I stay sober by the grace of God. And I'm not by no means any saint, okay? I'm just a man. And I fail. I fail in being a man. But my failures glorify my God, because he's perfect. And he forgives. If you ask me, what are you? I'll tell you what I am. You know, I'm a Franciscan Christian Buddhist Native American spiritualist, okay? That's pretty much what I am. And when I was young in AA and I went to meditation, and I just want to talk a little bit about meditation. I was taught to pray early on. You know, that's that. You know, if you were here when I first was talking in this series, I talked about the man that brought me to God. See, after I got out, for those of you who didn't hear the story, when I got out of the VA hospital after 2 months, and I went to go back to the old Central House. That's where I got sober, in Delray Beach. It was in the American Legion in those days. And as I went to walk into the American Legion to go to the meeting again, there was a man that stood in the doorway. And he wouldn't move out of my way. And he said to me, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to the meeting." He said, "You don't want to get sober." And I'm thinking, who is this jerk? Why won't he move? I said, "What are you talking about? I've been sober 2 months." He said, "Yeah, I heard up the VA hospital on anabuse. That's easy, but what are you going to do now?" And I'm thinking, who is this jerk? And I says, "Well, what do you want me to do, man?" And then he says, "Well, all I want you to do is what I've been trying to tell you for years to do." And I'm thinking, I don't even know this joker. What's he talking about trying to tell me for years to do? And I said, "Well, what's that, man?" And he said, "Get on your knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober." And I looked at him, and you know what I said to him? See, I'm still so defiant, because defiance is my outstanding characteristic. 10 years of never being able to put a year together. Periods of time over the years got shorter and shorter that I could sit in that seat. And the periods of time I could spend out there on the street, they got shorter and shorter too, because I went to the bottom quicker and quicker. And I said, "I don't see how that's going to do anything." And then he said to me, "Well, how's your way been working, wise guy? Has your way been working for you? And with a track record like mine, what are you going to say? You're going to say the same thing I said. I couldn't even say you were right, because I'm egotistical as hell. All I could say is, well, I guess you're right." And then he told me the best thing I was ever told by anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, "Well, then, I guess what you believe in doesn't make any difference then, does it? Because what you believe in doesn't work, does it?" And I had to agree. You're right. And then he said, well, this is not about what are you willing to believe in. It's not about that. It's about what are you willing to do. Are you just willing to try it? And try and be sincere. You don't have to believe it. He gave me my out. He said, you don't have to believe it. Just do it and try to be sincere. Will you pray? And don't ask God for anything but the strength to stay clean and sober today. God doesn't need you to tell him what you need. Because he's God and you're not. You see, I'm not really. Let's talk about the truth. The truth is none of us are capable of knowing what we need. All we're capable of is knowing what we want. But you see, I have an obsession of the mind, along with that allergy of the body. And that obsession of my mind is talking to me. I'm a self-talker. And I got a talking disease. It centers in my mind. And it's telling me all the time, you need this and you need that. And you need to make this happen. You need to make that happen. Even after the obsession of drink is removed, we still have the obsession of the mind. What do you think I need to treat my alcoholism for every day when I wake up? Because my alcoholism wakes up before I even open my eyes. It's already talking to me before I even get out of bed. You need to make this happen. You need to make that happen. Man, I got to get out of bed and treat my alcoholism right away and get on my knees and ask my God for the strength to stay clean and sober today. Take my life and my will under your care. Do with me as thou wilt. Thy will be done in my life and through my life. Thy will be done. And bless all those I love and care and I'm concerned for. My God knows what's in my heart. It's in my mind. And I don't tell him what you need either, because I don't know what you need, just like I don't know what I need. Bless them according to your will, not mine. I take my will out of this. I am in the action business. I'm not in the outcome business. God's in the outcome business. This is what my prayer life is about. Now, meditation, I mean, that's a different thing. I wanted to learn meditation when I was young in AA. And I would go, to meetings, to meditation meetings, transcendental meditation stuff with people, and they would turn to they do all the bowl and the candlelights and the soft music, and they would om. And I'm falling asleep. And I went to a mentor of mine, a man who's long dead now, named Dave DiIorio. He was a great guy. And I said, Dave, I'm just a loser, man. I can't do this meditation. And he asked me, he said, do you read the 24-hour-a-day book? See, us people have been sober for a long time. AA didn't have a book, so we're all hooked on the 24-hour-a-day book. I've been reading it 41 years. I said, yeah. And he said, well, where is it? I said, it sits on my toilet. He said, when do you read it? I said, I read it in the morning when I'm doing my business. He says, yeah. He said, and do you read the meditation for the day? And I said, yeah. And he said, and then do you sit there and think about it for a minute? About what you read in that meditation for the day? And I said, yeah. He said, well, you're meditating. Don't let anybody tell you that there's only, that you have to meditate this way or that way or the right way or the wrong way. A lot of egomaniacs in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, let's tell the truth, okay? I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Okay? It's like my old buddy Ronnie used to say. I was telling my French-Canadian friends about my old buddy Ronnie. He was a great guy. He had a wit. He used to say, you know, I don't think much of myself, but I'm all I think about. You know, so, you know, there's always somebody that wants to come say, oh, that's not the right way to do things. There's many ways to meditate. So we have to find what works for us. What works for us? This is a book by Bob Anderson called The Mind Power Disease. He's died in 97, but he got sober when I was born in 52. And he was a great guy. He helped reinvigorate my whole program at 18 years of sobriety. He says in talking on the 11th step, after all these steps, 1 through 11, each of us will come to know that there is something more than staying sober or going to meetings. It becomes something I want and need when I have discipline, when I'm honest with myself and with God. Then I get a world that is beautiful. It becomes more beautiful all the time, but only by God's grace, not mine. This growing beautiful world is what's in step 11. I cannot do this myself. I cannot even find out God's will for me by myself. I cannot even figure out what I need by myself. There are lots of things I think I need, but generally these things boomerang back at me. God does not say, I need these things. They're not what God says I need. They are what I think I need. Without this program, I was always talking to myself, telling myself what I needed. I want her. I want this. I want that. Give me this. Give me that. Every time I got what I thought I wanted, it didn't please me. My happiness could not be found in what I wanted. I was restless, irritable, discontented. I wasn't connecting my needs to God. I wasn't connecting my needs to the program. I figured that life was a struggle. You live out in the world on your terms, and life is a struggle. You win a few and you lose a few. I used to say, that's the way it goes. First your money and then your clothes. No, that ain't the way it goes. That's the way I went. This is a serious stuff, believe me. I've known guys and gals who came looking for recovery and wound up taking their own lives. At one time, I was puzzled by this. Here they were, guys I was close to, real close. One minute I'm talking to them, and the next they're lying in a casket. They're dead. They killed themselves, and they weren't even drunk. I looked at them, and I'd think, God, how can this be? This disease is a killer. It does too much damage when it's left untreated. But for the grace of God, that could have been me in that casket. I'm telling you this to scare you, to show you that steps can teach us how to live on God's terms. This way the disease can be treated. We've been given an opportunity, every one of us in this program, to find a way of life that will enable us to walk through adversity, even death. So what the heck? Why not live with a power that's greater than you? Why not have a way of life that will prevent you from getting so discouraged that you'll take a gun to your head and blow your brains out? Why? When all we have to do, you know, is get close to God. Let's give it to him. Let's give our lives to God. I like doing these here. This is the 10th year that I've been here doing this. I fell in love with them right away. As soon as they said, about let us bring you back to God. It works for me, you know. I didn't know how bad I had this obsession of the mind. I was around 4 years sober, and I had pretty much learned to give up everything to God except my relationship with a woman. Now, that was mine. You know, and she better do what I want her to do. And she wasn't doing what I wanted her to do. And if she'd just do what I want her to do, she'd be happy. And I'd be happy. And we'd have a wonderful life together, okay? And I have a man who became what I call my 11-step sponsor, you know, my spiritual sponsor. His name was Ed Hearn. He's been dead a long time, back in the early 80s. He was in his 80s. He started the first treatment center in Chicago. And he used to go, he was Irish Catholic, go to Mass every morning, go to the noon meeting at Center House, go home, take a nap. About 4 o'clock, he'd come to Denny's. I lived 2 blocks behind Denny's in Boynton alongside the tracks on 3rd. And I'd go into Denny's and sit down and have coffee with him. And I sat down and I started whining and moaning and carrying on about this woman, you know. I don't know what's wrong with her, you know, why she didn't blah, 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 blah. And he just sat there drinking his coffee real calm, you know, not even looking at me. And finally, you know, when I was done with my rant, I was expecting him to do one of two things. I was expecting him to either tell me to quit feeling sorry for myself or put his arm around me and tell me that it was going to be okay and feel sorry for me. And he didn't do either one of those things. He turned and he looked me in the eye and he said this to me. He said, "Tom, did you ever think of asking God to do anything for anybody but you?" I had an awakening. I never had asked God to do nothing for nobody but me. I heard Bob Anderson say it. I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. I related to that. I realized I never had even asked God to help my parents or do anything for anybody but me. And then he reached in his wallet and carried one of those big old leather suit wallets that men used to carry. And he had a bunch of these in there, holy cards of St. Francis. And he showed me the prayer on the back. And he said, "Tom, I suggest you take that prayer and put it into your prayer life, and maybe your character will change." And it did. It changed a lot. Because you start to realize that it's a whole lot better to be the one who understands than the one who needs to be understood. The one who consoles than the one who needs to be consoled. The one who forgives rather than having to have to be the one who needs to be forgiven. And the one who loves rather than the one who needs to be loved. This is a wonderful way of life. We get into the 12th step. That's why we have a spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening doesn't happen in the 12th step. It happened in the 11 steps. You know, it says, having had a spiritual awakening. That came from these 11 steps. We're there. We're at this spiritual awakening now. This is what I've been talking about. We're waking up to this way of life. A life of taking somebody who, when he first was given the big book 51 years ago and sat down to read it, only made it as far as page 62, where it said selfishness and self-centeredness, we believe, is the root of all our troubles. And I took the book and threw it across the room. And I said, "That's a bunch of crap." Because you see, I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted it to be about you. My victim story. I didn't want to be responsible for my alcoholism. Why would I want to do that? It's so much easier to blame somebody and to feel sorry. So we have this awakening, right? Says in the 12 and 12 on page 106 in step 12, our 12th step also says that as a result of practicing all the steps, we have found something called a spiritual awakening. He has granted a gift, the next page, which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he is really going somewhere. That life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. It is a very real sense he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength which in one way or another he had hitherto denied himself. I deny myself, and I can deny myself today. Deny myself of, like I was talking to Eric before the meeting, a kid once told me, he said, well, you know, I don't know what God's will is for me. Oh, really? You know, I used to think that God had, I was so egotistical, so arrogant, that I actually believed that God had some special will just for me because I thought I was so special. How arrogant is that? You think about it. Out of all these billions of souls, you're so special, God's got a special will just for you? Well, I don't know what God's will is for me. You don't? Well, I'll tell you, you'll find it in the big book. I think it's on 138 anyway. It says, you know, and we're sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. That's what God's will is for all of us. To be happy, joyous, and free. Because God loves us unconditionally. My God loves me unconditionally. No matter what, he loves me. I cannot make him stop loving me. He's not capable of not loving me. His love is what created me in his image. And I want to be happy. Well, happiness is just a byproduct of living right. It doesn't come from anything other than that. It's a natural thing. Stop being a liar, cheat, and a thief, a controller, and a manipulator. Stop trying to have your way in everything. Because trying to have when I try to have my way in everything, guess who's unhappy? I'm unhappy. Because I'm not getting what I want. And I want what I want when I want it. And I want it my way, and I want it right now. So, you know, this awakening is really simple. It's a simple thing. It's what I'm talking about. It's all about letting go and letting God. Staying in the action of this way of life and leaving the outcome to God. And I awaken to a wonderful and beautiful life. I mean, man that started our program, he used to say, and I raised my boys, or started our men's meeting, you know, that I've been in 30 years. My home group in Boca, John Mosier, he's dead now. Me and my sponsor use people's names that are dead. You know, we don't use live people's names. We use dead people's names. That's how we remember them. We keep them alive that way. I raised my sons on what he used to tell us. If it's not yours, don't take it. If it's not true, don't say it. And if it's not right, don't do it. Just obey these three simple rules. Three laws. You said there's only three laws you have to obey. You got to obey the laws of man or you're going to the penitentiary. You got to obey the laws of nature, you're going to get sick and die. You got to obey the laws of God or you're going to live a stinking miserable life. Here and now, not the hereafter for me. It ain't about the hereafter. It's about here and now. Heaven is within me. Life can be heaven or it can be hell. It's pretty simple. It's an easy way of life when you look at it. From great numbers of such experiences, we could predict that the doubter who still claimed that he hadn't got the spiritual angle and who still considered his well-loved AA group the higher power would presently love God and call him by name. How many I've known over the years. How many I've known. It's okay where you are right now. I'm not here to beat nobody up or tell you that you're wrong. You're going where you need to go. I went through what I needed to go through. I tell my guys, and one of them sitting right here in the front, who had as much trouble, if not more, than me, that everything that happened to him, everything that happened to me, is what needed to happen to me to get me to where God needed me to be. I've never changed out of virtue. I've only changed out of pain. Like a man, Bill said, a man who once knew what he was talking about said, pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth. By the way, that man was St. Francis that Bill was talking about. My favorite saints were always the greatest sinners. My story is a conversion story. It's about being converted from the no good scumbag gutter laying drunken criminal that I was to the man that I've been for the past 41 years. And I continue to keep working on that because I'm still human. And, you know, like it says at the bottom, page 109, his own character may still be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning. And he senses that he stands at the edge of new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he had never even dreamed. When we carry this message, to watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light, to see their lives quickly filled with new purpose and meaning, to see whole families reassembled, to see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship, and above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These things are the substance of which we receive as we carry his AA message to the next alcoholic. That's why it talks about in the literature, you don't want to miss this. Man, to have the life that I've had, to be able to do that. You say, why are you still enthusiastic all these years? Why you still go to a meeting almost every day? Probably 6 days a week, I always go to meetings. Love going to meetings. I love it. We have to practice. You know, the 12 step is a three-part step. We have awakening. We carry the message. We practice the principles. Or the truths, as one man calls them, the truths. All these things are possible. Our answer is still. What's the answer? Our answer is still. This is the bottom of page 114. 12 and 12. Our answer is still more spiritual development. Only by this means can we improve our chances for really happy and useful living. As we grow spiritually, we find that our old attitudes toward our instincts need to undergo drastic revisions. Our desires for emotional security and wealth, for personal prestige and power, for romance, and for family satisfactions, all these have to be tempered and redirected. We have learned that the satisfaction of instincts cannot be the sole end and aim of our lives. If we place instincts first, we have got the cart before the horse. We should be pulled backward into disillusionment. And when we are willing to place spiritual growth first, then and only then do we have a real chance. After we come into AA, if we go on growing, our attitudes and actions towards security, emotional security, financial security, commence to change profoundly. Our demand for emotional security, for our way, for our own way, had constantly thrown us into unworkable relations with other people. Though we were sometimes quite unconscious of this, the result always had been the same. Either we had tried to play God and dominate those about us, or we had insisted on being over-dependent upon them. Where people had temporarily let us run their lives as though they were still children, We had felt very happy and secure ourselves, but when they finally resisted or ran away, we were bitterly hurt and disappointed. We blamed them, being quite unable to see that our unreasonable demands had been the cause. Bill suffered depression because he's a codependent. When he wrote the essay on emotional sobriety, that's what we're talking about. We're all codependents. We're all dependent. We have a dependency. That obsession of the mind transfers our dependencies to other things once we get clean of the alcohol. I need to wrap this up, so I want to wrap it up this way. I love this. Page 124 in the 12 and 12, I think, wraps it up better than anything. We no longer strive to dominate or rule those about us in order to gain self-importance. We no longer seek fame and honor in order to be praised. One, by devoted service to family, friends, businesses, our community, we attract widespread affection and are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust. We try to be humbly grateful and exert ourselves the more in a spirit of love and service. True leadership, we find, depends upon able example and not upon vain displays of power or glory. Still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside we are partners in a common effort, the well-understood fact that in God's sight all human beings are important, the proof that love freely given surely brings a full return, the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons, the surety that we need no longer be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfaction of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Thanks for letting me share.
Don't go anywhere. I think James got something for you.
Tom. As a special thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us for these past 6 weeks, we have a couple special gifts for you. First gift is 2 collector limited production first edition Big Book refrigerator magnets. Actually, I lied. It's just 1. And a limited edition Crunch Monkey sticker. And the second gift is a limited edition coffee mug. Oh, and also we have this pin for your sponsor. You too can get a pin if you whine enough for it. No, I'm just kidding. Please welcome up Tom for his gifts.
We have tonight's session and all our past speakers podcasted for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. Again, I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study in this room at 7:15 p.m. And those who wish to thank Tom, please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
desperately in need of restoration.
Shining through, but when on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
dark. I'm gonna let it shine out in Michael Chase. Here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? I've worked so hard for someone I don't know. Joanna. Just won't set me free. Well, clap your hands if you believe me, tell.